Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is now 8:08 here at WCCO. Welcome. You are listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele, on every Sunday night from 7 to 11 p.m. We really enjoy having you as our guest, as our family, as our friends. As we continue talking tonight, there is so much that is happening on this beautiful Easter Sunday that we had. And as we're wrapping up these late hours and children are readying themselves for tomorrow, going back to school after a spring break or what have you, it is really quite remarkable. The statistics that came out of D.C. recently from the Gallup poll, because we want to talk about this whole idea of Easter and going to church. As many of you know, I've asked my son, Michael Battle, who joins me every Sunday night, the last hour of the night at 10 o'clock, where we talk. It's called the Mom and Michael Hour, by the way, where we talk about everything, including, did you go to church today? And what's interesting is from this Gallup poll, not many people are going back to church. In fact, it says from the data, as Christian and Jewish Americans prepare to celebrate Easter and Passover, respectively, Gallup finds the percentage of Americans who report belonging to a church. My sister Janice is a pastor, and she always says to me it's about belonging, not just going to church. Those who report belonging to a church, synagogue, or mosque at an all-time low, averaging 50% in 2018. Now, U.S. church members was 70% or higher from 1937 through 1976. That was a good run, falling only modestly to an average of 68% in the 70s through the 90s. That's right, through the 90s. Now, the past 20 years have seen an acceleration in the drop-off of going to church, with a 20 percentage point decline since 1999, and more than half of that change occurring since the start of the current decade. So can you believe it? At the beginning of the new millennia, we are seeing mass exits from church, and it's hurting. I think our children need to have a foundation, and what happens with that? Well, joining me to talk tonight about what these statistics really mean, particularly in he himself is in ministry. His name is Sam Eaton. He is a local music teacher who runs his own ministry called Recklessly Alive. How are you, Sam?
Hi, Geraldine. Great. Happy Easter.
Hey now, welcome to CCO. Why are people shunning going to church or being affiliated with a religion, especially the young demographics like the millennials on down?
You know, I wrote an article 3 years ago that got tons of attention. It got over 3 million hits, 750,000 shares, which I never saw coming. People don't usually care what I have to say. I'm a teacher, right? And so anyway, but what I wrote just kind of exploded, and I really was just trying to tell my story and my experiences. You know, I had a suicide attempt at the age of 23, battled back from that, and a huge part of that story of coming back was going to church. I found a community, a place that I belonged. I found a purpose, and faith had been a part of my story, and it just had never been the center part of it. And so even after serving for 5 and 6 years in so many areas, I kept hitting a wall. I kept burning out and asking myself, okay, what's going on here? You know, I'm sitting in this large church. There's a church meeting of 200 people. There's 5 people under 30 there. And I'm asking myself, God, what are we missing? Like, right. We're missing something here. When nobody that is in my age group, when my friends I went to high school with, they walked out of the church, what are we missing? And I just started asking that. And you know, some of the things I wrote, it's not rocket science. You know, it's listening to younger people, caring for the poor, you know, not blaming this culture, being transparent with where resources are going. Not rocket science, but a lot of people really identified with what I had to say.
Mm-hmm. From your experience, you now have this ministry that came from that, correct?
Yeah. So I had written a blog for 7 years. I had always just shared my struggle. You know, my mission has always just been to share the good and the bad of my faith journey and the struggles that I've hit and with mental health. And so 2016, just out of a huge need of talking about suicide, especially in the church, I launched a suicide prevention ministry to really get people talking about it and just share so much hope and help. And, you know, I think that that's one of the big issues here is churches tend to shy away from really relevant issues. They're afraid of offending people, right? They want people to come. They're afraid of the numbers. And so they shy away from these people, these topics that young people are just desperate to talk about.
Yet they won't say what they want to talk about. They expect us to know that. And so in your experience, have you found a way to crack that nut to get into the heart of the young people that want to say something? They want to hear it. They want to know what you think about it and what others think about it. But how do you get them to finally begin the talk?
I mean, first, we just have to admit that we have a huge PR problem with the church. I mean, just I'm 30. I turned 30 last summer. I can't think of a time in my life that scandals in the church haven't been all across the news. And I think the days of us just expecting people to walk in the door because we have nice carpeting and Starbucks coffee, I think they're anything of the past. You know, Paul said, go and make disciples. And I think that's a huge part of what we're missing is that, you know, we can't just sit in an empty church. We need to go talk to people and hear their story and hear, you know, real hurt. What have they experienced from the church? And share that, you know, not every experience is that way.
Well, Jesus didn't have a church.
Right.
Right. And so I never understood that whole thing of going and sitting in the big churches. I did it. Believe me, I did it since childhood. But let me tell you, there was a time when I finally just said, nope, I got enough of that. I just want to have people see God in me, right? And I don't know if I'm successful or not at that, but I just keep living my life and, you know, hoping that they will see Christ in me. I don't need to preach at anybody. I don't need to get out on the corners and witness. Do you do that sort of thing?
Oh, no. Oh, gosh, no.
So what does recklessly alive mean?
So for me, I think people are desperate to feel alive. I think that they're desperate to live their best life. And for me, that is following Jesus has been the answer to that. You know, I have found a much more fulfilled life following Jesus than I have without. And I want to share that with people. Mm-hmm. But I do that through meeting needs. I do that. We have a huge need for mental health in this country. And so I'm happy to go and share about that. And I think that that's the way we start to crack open that door again, is we ask, you know, who's hurting around us? Who needs the most help? You know, the opioid addiction, sex trafficking, what is it in our culture that people are desperate for help? And we as the church need to go there. We need to go and be that love.
And how do you begin this step? Because we've heard that over and over and over again. And of course, as you as a millennial, the millennials don't have an interest in it. They don't want to hear it. They don't want someone walking up to them saying, you need Jesus in your life. You know, they want to say, hey, show me what it is that you have, you know, and why can't I go and talk to the Muslims? Why can't I go and talk to the Jews? Why can't I go and converse with others of a different faith and still be able to carry my own?
Yeah, I think that young people do want that. And I think that they want to be activated, just like you said in the last segment. They want to actually make a difference in the world. And I think that that's where a lot of churches get stuck. They get stuck in the actual religion part of church and the walls and that part, and they forget to get out there. I mean, more young people are volunteering now than the generations before them. More young people are working for nonprofits. They desperately care about making this world a better place, and so we need to partner. Instead of accusing them and blaming them for never coming to church and not wanting to walk in the door, we just need to be humble enough to say, you know what, we screwed up in some areas. You know, as a church, we've really hurt some people. And we're really sorry about
That's right.
we just want to love you and show you that, you know, there are other ways of living than partying and being obsessed with money and appearances. But that life is actually more about love.
Do you also believe that we have got to open our hearts to other faiths, not necessarily taking in their faith and saying, I believe in their faith, but actually saying, I receive you and love you, even though our faiths are different?
Well, 100%. 100%. What is life if you can't love your neighbor and you can't care for them and you can't be there for them?
Well, Sam, I appreciate you calling tonight. Is there a place where people can get your book?
The book's not out yet, but I would love for you to follow along recklesslyalive.com or recklesslyalive on Facebook and Instagram.
All right. I appreciate you joining us. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. The It is now 8:20 here at WCCO. Shaletta Brundage, you must tell me, who is this song by?
That is a Chris Brown song.
That is no, oh, excuse me. There's no way that is a Chris Brown
yeah,
song.
Yeah, listen.
He sounds like he's 17. Wow. No one talks about him anymore, do they?
No.
Okay, so here's the thing. There is such a large percentage of people who are walking away from the church. What's interesting to me is that it really began, the big change began Y2K. Remember 1999, we were all warned, you know, the Prince tune 1999 was playing all the time. And, you know, people were going out buying and filling up their pantries with whatever food they could because we were warned that everything could fall apart, right? Our security, our satellites, everything could fall apart. And then, of course, those that were born in the 80s and 90s, they started watching how we reacted to that. Where was our faith, right? Did they think, oh, you're preparing for what? I mean, is this Jesus come? Is this the apocalypse? And if so, how come you're upset about that? I don't know if it was something that they watched or something that we said or something that we did that changed everything. I know for my children, they were so disillusioned at the megachurch that I was going to. Really disillusioned. They had so many questions about it. And, you know, Christian zealots have been responsible for turning a lot of people away from the Christian church. And of course, the scandals and the scandal and the scandal after scandal has also attributed to the turnaway. But isn't it a personal thing, a personal walk? Isn't this something that you do not because you have to, not because your parents tell you better go to church? I remember growing up, there were people, parents who would bring their church, their children to church, but they would not. They would take their children to church instead of bring them to church, right? My parents got us all shiny and dressed up to be at Sunday school at 8:30. We were there with our father as a superintendent of the Sunday school. And we were there until about 2 in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, no, they weren't the parents who would send you to church. They brought us to church with them. Maybe that was something. Maybe we gave our children too many options. You want to go to church today? Oh, you don't want to? Okay, honey.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Stay home.
Or they
it's
think
okay.
When you tell them it's an option.
It's an option. This is not a request.
No. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you would you
morning.
Like. It's like, get your tail up.
Yeah.
We want to church. Right?
Right.
I mean, that's how it was.
Yeah.
So I'm amazed that, you know, this 20 percentage point decline since 1999. Of course, again, this was during the advent of social media. You know, social media had everybody abuzz. Right? You had so many friends on social media. You could talk to only Christians if you wanted to. You could talk to only teenagers if you wanted to. You could hone in on exactly who you wanted to be in your tiny circle. Your tiny circle of life. And I think that's hurt us. Because most of those that have all these friends don't have any friends. We've talked about that before. So the church is messed up. There's no doubt about it. The physical church itself, the whole organization of churches has really caused some major problems. And by the way, those who thought it was a good idea to have shows like, you know, Preachers of LA and Preachers of Detroit and it's nuts. People watch and they see this and they believe these shows like Housewives of Atlanta. You're going to watch something called The Preachers of L.A. and you're going to believe everything that you see. And they did. And so many of them left the church. And went, I'm not. After you said that on television, I'm assuming that's how you really feel. I'm walking away. So maybe we demand so much more from the church. We demand honesty. We demand that our children are safe when we walk through the doors of the church. So how did we get here? Why now? Why in 2000 did we start to see an increase of falling away from the church? Okay, that was the time when George W. Bush was in office, and that was the time of the wars, the Afghanistan and Iraq wars, and of course 9/11, and so much more. So much more. Very difficult time in our lives. And the churches opened their doors to so many people. Remember Katrina and Will, what was her name? Wilma, I think it was the other hurricane that hit back to back in Florida and other states, Louisiana. And there were churches that opened their doors and said, come to our state. We will get you here. We will give you a bus ticket. You bring your families. We're going to put you with another family or put you in the church, you know, to sleep in the church until we can find a place for you, find a job for you. We came together as a nation. even though we didn't like what was going on, people were hurting. And we stood up for that, right? So some injustices, absolutely, that need to be dealt with forthright. Yet, we are sitting here watching, learning, hearing, you know, all the stories, all the behind the scenes. I remember going to a mega church and I said to myself, don't get involved, because once I get involved, I'm not going to like what I learn. So I went to be a pew member. Let me tell you something. I was not raised to be a pew member. I was well entrenched in the church when I was growing up. We were always busy doing something, from cleaning the church, cooking, bringing young people in, having what they call musicals, where all these choirs would come from all over the city and neighboring cities. And they had so much for young people to go, amusement parks and games and you name it. We had a lot to do. But nowadays it's different. You walk in a church and many of those churches don't even have, you know, any vestiges that mention that this is a church, you know, the things that you're used to seeing. And they did that for a reason. You know, a lot of the mega churches said, we don't want you to have to see crosses and see those sort of things. You need to just know that Jesus is here or God is here. Right? This is just a whole nother ball game. So what does that mean to us as a nation if we are not entrenched in our faith? If we do not have clarity in our faith, whatever that faith is, what does that mean? Or is there a new faith being developed, growing? The faith of non-churchgoers, the nuns, as they call them, N-O-N-E, the nons, I should say. If I say nuns, people would think N-U-N-N, but no. More people leaving the church, and that's a growing number. So then what happens to them? It's something we need to pay attention to. Because civility is leaving the world. It is walking right off the planet. Does the lack of religion, lack of faith, the lack of understanding have a whole lot to do with that? And if so, where do we begin to really heal and talk about it? It is now 8:33 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. It is what I love to do, is sit here and gab with you on a Sunday night. But I have some ladies in studio tonight, and I'm really excited to continue this conversation about what is happening in the church, particularly when it comes to the big celebrations of Easter. I was so excited about Easter today, was not feeling well enough to go to church, but I went to church Saturday night, and it really meant a lot to me to be there in that room with so many different choirs from some of the same denominations and some that were not. And I love it when it's ecumenical, or even when it's interfaith, that you can get a chance to meet and greet other people, get involved in conversations about what they believe and how their faith, how they interact with their faith as well. Well, joining me in studio is Mariana Ariaza. And she is a former St. Joseph worker and is now employed by Learning in Style School as the Education Outreach Coordinator. Jean is a sister of St. Joseph of Carondelet and a former member of the leadership team. So welcome. So
thank
nice
you.
To have you, Mariana. Jean Winsick, it's so nice to have you in studio as well. The thing here is that, as you know, the work that the sisters are doing is a big deal. It's huge what you all are doing. So let me start with you on this, Jean, because times are really changing.
They are.
Tell us what you really do, how much you, justice is a really big part of the sisters' mission, right?
It is.
Let's start with that.
Well, I can say that our mission is love of God and love of neighbor without distinction. And the without distinction applies to the neighbor. Love the neighbor without any distinction, and it also applies to the relationship between God and neighbor. Like Scripture says, loving the neighbor is loving God. And so that's what we're about as a community, and we express that mission in our works. They're works of justice, they're works to reach out to people on the margins, like the people that Mariana works with. They are works of inviting people in so that they can deepen their spirituality, no matter what denominational belief they come from. And we also are advocates for those who are on the margins.
You know, the sisters within the Catholic Church, the nuns, you have really made a mark. Through the elections now, you have a voice, a very clear voice that many of us are waiting to hear. We heard about it in 2016. We heard about it in 2008 and 2012. And so as we watch it unfold, the growth and the voice of the Catholic sisters, it really is growing. How do you feel about having interjected yourselves into the conversation politically?
Oh, we belong there. It's who we are, and it's our reason for being is to interject ourselves into that conversation by what we do and what we say, and especially how we treat those who are not treated well generally in society.
So do you agree that the Bible is political, if nothing else?
Well, that's a very nuanced question, Geraldine.
It is. It really is. But, you know, I heard a pastor say that in church one Sunday, and I was very surprised. I started doing my research, trying to figure out, so what does that mean to me? Because, you know, we've always had the separation of church and state, and, you know, you start talking politics, it's a whole nother business. But, of course, you know, a budget is a moral document.
Absolutely it is. And we belong with the people. We belong in the debate. We belong in the civil discourse. And if our voices aren't there, then we're missing something. And it's not just the voices of the sisters. It's those who really are people who care about the common good.
Mm-hmm. But it is the sisters of the Catholic Church that we are hearing the most from, the ones we wait to hear from, not just as women, but as community.
Yes, and the Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet have been around in the Twin Cities area mm-hmm. since the 1850s. Mm-hmm. And so we grew up with this archdiocese. We helped build the infrastructure of this archdiocese. So I believe that we not only have had a voice as people who have run these large institutions like St. Catherine University mm-hmm. and St. Joseph's Hospital, St. Mary's Hospital, before they became part of other health systems now. We have had a voice in developing policy and advocating for those most in need. And now we have a voice also in working with those who are the immigrants.
Well, you have extensions. You're like an octopus. You know, you have extended yourselves quite a bit
right.
in this great state of Minnesota and beyond,
yeah.
right?
Yes.
And knowing all of the services that are offered today, can you give me some understanding about what many of them are?
Yes, I can tell you that we have some of our ministries, for example, St. Mary's Health Clinics
mm-hmm.
is
very crucial.
It's
very important.
Very crucial mm-hmm. because that is a ministry of ours, a work of ours that serves people who are underinsured or uninsurable. And we don't ask questions. We simply serve their health needs when they come and refer them to the health systems when appropriate.
With health care or without?
Without. They have. Most of them are uninsurable, or they are people who are working very hard at their jobs mm-hmm. and the deductibles are so high that they can't pay them. So they wait until they're really ill mm. before they come and they
learn
about.
So you've replaced the emergency.
In a sense, we have.
Yeah.
In a sense, we have. And we're working on developing relationships now with the systems.
And how many of those healthcare facilities do you have?
We have, I believe, right now, 7. Mm-hmm. Clinics, and they're around the Twin Cities area.
That's really quite remarkable. Are you looking to expand further?
We're looking to refocus. Mm-hmm. We're looking to collaborate more, and we will always be there to meet the needs.
Mm-hmm. Community has always been a really big part of what you do, getting out into the community, letting people see who you are, what it
yes.
is that you do. No longer do I see nuns as old women that are, you know, you know, rubbing their rosaries every day. And forgive my, you know, disrespect if I am disrespecting you here, but I don't mean to. But really, you think of them as what you see on television. And it's so much more than that.
People are surprised to see. They say to us, oh, you don't look like a sister.
Right.
Well, what is a sister supposed to look like?
Right.
I am one.
Right. But you do sound like one. See, that's the change.
Ah.
The change is that we are now looking far past what you look like. We want to hear what you have to say.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I can't say the same for the priest and the brothers. I cannot say the same. I can tell you that my focus, especially during the election or difficult times or in the need, I always look to the women of the Catholic Church.
Well, thank you. And what I want to say in response to that is that the sisters can't do this alone, and we never have spoken our truth alone. We have consociates who are women and men who believe in the same set of values that we do,
mm-hmm.
that we hold, and that they commit themselves to living our mission, the mission that we of loving God and neighbor without distinction, in the context of their own lives. We have St. Joseph workers like Mariana
right.
here. We have friends of St. Joseph who have affiliated themselves with us in another way. So the center now is not just the sisters. The center is the mission, and however we live our lifestyle, we can be voices for those whose voice needs to be heard.
All right, Mariana, let's get you in here because you, of course, are employed by Learning in Style School. Tell us what that is.
So Learning in Style School is a school for adult immigrants who want to learn English. They have a need to learn English. If it's for employment or interviewing for a job, when they have kids, it's talking to their teachers. When they have appointments, it's talking to the doctors. But it's not just English. We have citizenship classes, math classes, and part of my role there as the educational outreach coordinator is working on everything else that isn't their academics. I look into organizations in the community. I try to keep them very local because transportation can also be an issue. So
transportation as well as housing.
Yeah.
Do you also deal with housing?
Yes, we look into housing. That's a big issue. I am also on the Whittier board. I recently got elected into it, so I am looking into the housing committee meetings that they have mm-hmm. so that people who are living in the Whittier neighborhood can find those resources because that's become a big issue in the neighborhood is finding housing.
As the education outreach coordinator, do you see the resources fading?
No. There's always...
Because this is an ever-changing conversation, that's why
yeah,
I ask, right?
There's always...
You know, the one who is screaming the loudest yeah. is the one that's usually going to get some money in that budget, right?
Right, yeah.
And here you are, probably screaming at the top of your lungs that, hey, we need more.
Right.
We need more opportunities
right.
to reach out to them. Yet yeah. I can just imagine how difficult that is becoming for you.
Yeah, and, you know, I think the organizations that we work with, we can see that they're trying. They're trying to keep a good clientele, trying to keep people coming.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, as you mentioned before, work politically and trying to raise some of that awareness of what they're doing. I always am surprised because I keep finding new organizations and new programs that I've never heard of before that are so close in the area. And so it's just finding those, maybe they're not as well known, but just finding those smaller programs that mm-hmm. could help our students out.
I don't know about yeah. you. I'm pretty sure that Jean is probably losing sleep. I know I'm losing sleep.
Yeah.
You got to be losing sleep. Seriously, because yeah. it's a very yeah. tough time right now in our nation. We used mm-hmm. to be the place that opened our hearts mm-hmm. and minds to others. You know,
yeah.
we are a collection of immigrants.
Right.
And so here we are now finding ourselves falling
yeah.
away from that understanding. And we have these children that are watching it every day. They're watching mm-hmm. us trying to figure out, what are you going to do?
Right.
So what do you say to those immigrants that have arrived? They come to you. They know what the sisters are doing. They know the history of the sisters. They're learning so much more about where
yeah.
they can go to get the help that they need. Are you hearing
yeah.
this? Say, I'm almost giving up?
No. I see a lot of hope. You know, a lot of them have had really bad experiences before, but I really see the hope when they come in and the strength, you know. Sorry, it's like emotional to talk about because they're very strong and they continuously come back and learn.
If there were two things that I could invent, the first would be every time a word leaves my mouth that should not, that I could retrieve it quickly. That'd be the first thing. The second thing would be to bottle hope.
Yeah.
No need to sell it. Just give it away. So to even know that you still have that, you know, we were in that place in 2007, 2008. Even with all we were going through, we had hope. Where does hope live for you right now? You have it, but is it something that you can retrieve very quickly? Can you reach in your pocket right now and just fill yourself up? Or where do you go to replenish?
I try to keep it through seeing it in the eyes of others and what they're doing. I think that's the way that you kind of, I replenish the hope, is just looking at everyone else around me and seeing that, that strength that they have.
Have you been on that road before yourself?
Looking
for the resources, trying to figure out how to maneuver?
Yeah, well, I've seen it in family, mm-hmm. for sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's tough, isn't it?
Yeah.
To revisit that, and I'm sure that reminds you as well. So this work that you do at St. Joseph's, right, it's not just important to others that come to you for the help. Right. It is as important to those who work there, those who are entrenched in it, those who are constantly finding a way to make it so. Whatever that so is, mm-hmm. you're working hard to find a way to do that. In knowing that, how many times do you have to get out there and scream at the top of your lungs, you know, use your brain trust to find a way that will open a door that will not open?
It's very challenging to open doors that won't open, especially if they're political doors.
Right.
We have a place called Sarah's, an Oasis for Women, that I wanted to mention, and it is a home for women who come. Most of them are referred to us by the Center for Victims of Torture or other places like that. And they come to live there, to have a home for at least a year to 18 months to 2 years and so forth. And they are becoming women that I look to for enduring hope, because their courage is so strong from what they've come from. Mm-hmm. And their resolve to make their lives better and to have their families join them eventually from the countries of their origin is so strong. And people like Mariana give me hope. It's that younger generation that is committed to making this world a better place, one person at a time, one agency at a time, one group at a time. That's where I find my hope.
So what would you say to those, particularly the millennials, who have fallen away from the church? I'm one of those that does not have a church home right now. You know, some of my family refer to me as the heathen, which I am not. Mm-hmm. Let's make that clear. I have a faith walk. At the same time, we tire of things that we hear and see and experience. Mm-hmm. What do you say to young people today that need the help but may be afraid to come to the church to get the help?
I'm not sure that they come to the church.
Well, even not the church. If it's the services that you offer,
right.
It's still the association with the church.
Right.
Any type of church.
I think that relationships, building relationships, is absolutely key. You know, I look at the young women at our university, and many of them do not indicate that they belong to any religion, although some of them are Catholic by birth and by training. Mm-hmm. And it's just being in relationship with them, inviting them in and saying, come and see that there's a purpose in life that might not be yours right now, but you might learn something from it.
Right.
We have another ministry called Wisdom Ways, which is a wonderful opportunity for people of all faiths mm-hmm. to come and see. We say it's a home for seekers. It's a safe place for questioning. We have another ministry called Hedgerow, which explores what's around the edges mm-hmm. in a safe place. Mm-hmm. So it's invitational. We have a community garden, and we say, come and dig around in the soil and talk to one another.
Right.
So I think that's how people are invited in to church.
All right, we're going to talk about how you can help, because there's a big gala coming up. They'd love for you to attend. I would love for you to be there as well. They're doing great work. A lot of times we get so clouded in some of the news stories. It can be very clouding. Even if we've had our own experiences that have been detrimental to our faith and what our understanding is. But when there are people doing good work, come see for yourself. And you decide if this is something you want to put your hands to, or you want to put your money to, or you want to put your heart to. I want to tell you all about that in just a moment. We'll be back. It is now 8:52 here at WCCO. Make sure you stay tuned for all things arts and entertainment. We call it Center Stage, and that's coming up in the next hour. And then my son, Michael Battle, for the Mom and Michael Hour will end the night. It's a pleasure having you here. And in studio with us have been two women who are very passionate about the Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet. And the Ministries Foundation and all that they are doing, they're hosting its annual Carondelet Gala on Friday, May 3rd, right at the Hilton downtown Minneapolis. You know the address, on 10th and Marquette Avenue South. Now, this fundraising event will feature a cocktail reception, hey now, silent auction, games of chance, which I have so many questions about that, an elegant dinner program, live auction, and entertainment by the Sevilles. Now, I will be the MC for the night, and I can't wait. I have not done anything with the Catholic Church or the Sisters for years. I used to go down to Mankato and be a part there, and I just keep saying to myself, what happened? Where did I lose that mark? And so when Mimi Peasy contacted me, I was really excited to be a part of this evening. I want you to know that you can contact them for this event. Are there still tickets available, Jean?
Yes, there are.
There are. Where do people go to get more information?
You can go online to the Ministries Foundation, CSJ Ministries Foundation.
CSJ Ministries, T-R-I-E-S, foundation.org.
Yes.
When they come, and they may have questions as they're walking in the door. Maybe there are people listening that say, this sounds wonderful and I definitely want to help, but I want to know more. I want to talk to someone. Is there a number they can call?
Yes, I am sure there is. And it is,
I don't have it, but I can look it up. Anyone know? We got a lot of people in this room. Somebody need to know.
651.
651.
690.
690.
7058.
7058. Yay, Mimi. So 651-690-7058. If you want to ask the questions, call and ask the questions. Find out exactly what you're getting into. And if you want to be there, bring some people with you. Come and see for yourself. They do this every year.
Yes.
What year is this for you?
I don't know for sure.
Wow. Well, I'm excited to be a part
Maybe
of it.
Maybe 30-something.
About 30-something?
Yes.
That's amazing. So I'm excited. So thank you so much for inviting me. And to know, to learn what you are doing has been quite incredible. Mariana Ariaza, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank
I know
you.
That the walk you are walking is quite difficult, but can you imagine the walk that Jean walked? You know, can you imagine those that came before you?
Right.
And so we are as strong as they are. We just have to bring it up, right? We have to bring it out,
right.
Up and out.
Exactly.
Do you have a mantra that you report every day, that you say to yourself every day? You look into the mirror and say, what?
Today's another day, and take it one day at a time, really.
Yeah. Mine is a head up, heart open.
Mm.
I feel like I can get through anything if I think that way. Mm. I'm not looking down at my feet. Head up, heart open.
Yeah.
It matters, doesn't it? Words matter.
Words do matter.
Words matter. So come learn all about the Sisters of St. Joseph. And again, that number is 651-690-7058. If you want to get tickets, all you have to do is go to CSJ Ministries
Foundation.
Oh, my goodness. You say it, sister.
CSJMinistriesFoundation.org.
Okay, she got it right. I'm not going to argue with her at all. Thank you both for being in studio with us tonight, sharing what you feel about what your ministry is doing. How important that is. And some people may call up and say, so are you going to preach at me if I become a part of what you're doing? If I come in for a need, you know, does that mean that you're going to really come after me and say something? No.
Absolutely.
Right?
Just
Thank come
you,
and get the services that you need.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jean. Thank you, Mariana. Well, that has been our night talking about faith and going to church and what it really means. It's changing, isn't it? At first, we were taught that you have to go to church. That's what you did. And then all of a sudden, times have changed. Our children are having more autonomy at a much younger age. And so for them to make a decision to have some type of thing that they believe in, you know, I used to say all the time, I don't care if you believe in a head of lettuce, as long as it makes you a better person. But if it doesn't make you a better person, then realize that and do something about it. Establish a faith, because with that, at least you have something to stand on, right? Because if you have nothing to stand on, honey, you will fall. It's the only thing that holds me up sometimes. So, yes, we talk about church. We talk about the fall away from church. But you can find church in other ways. You can find the sisters at St. Joseph of Carondelet that really matter and say, you matter here. We're not going to judge you for who you are or what you're doing. They can't say necessarily, you know, that everything is welcome here, but they can say everyone is welcome here. So don't forget that. Get out. Stretch yourself, honey. Find a way to make it so that it's okay to step out on faith. Find it. Look at a mirror. Get yourself a sacred space in your house. I don't do yoga. I don't do the pretzel thing. Can't do it. Gerald would never get up. But what I do believe in is something so much bigger than me. I feel it, I sense it, and I pray that you will see it in me when you see me. And if you don't, tell me. You've been listening to Steele Talk, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. Like I said earlier, coming up next is all things arts and entertainment. We like to call it center stage. And guess who's coming in? Some of the NPG, the new power generation. You do not want to miss this conversation. As you know, this is the anniversary of the death of Prince. He was family to us. I miss him dearly, but we're going to celebrate him some tonight.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O'Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh, oh.